You're listening to Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida. And we're actually not in a studio today, but we're recording from someone's living room in San Francisco. So you can record from wherever you want, anyone that's interested in radio. And here in the living room / studio today, we've got Patty, Victoria, Antonio, Sara, Tyler, and Dan, and myself, Jessica.
On today's program, we're going to be talking about police violence and responses to police violence, particularly trying to figure out what we can learn from two particular examples of the police murdering kids. And so what we're going to be bringing up is the murder of Oscar Grant that happened on January 1st, 2009, and the murder of Alexis Gregoropoulos that happened on December 6th, 2008. So two murders that happened in very close proximity to each other. And we're going to be talking about the responses to both of those events, and trying to see how we can think about those in the context of each other.
And towards the end of the show, we're also going to be bringing up or giving an update on Lomas de Poleo, the community down in Mexico. So stay tuned for that, and we're going to go to a musical break, and we'll be back with the organizing from the Oscar Grant incident and Greece.
The shaky drove his Cadillac. He went cruising down the hill. The prison was a standing on the radiator grill. Shall we come back in?
All right, we're back at Radio Zapatista, and we're here talking about police violence and community organizing from below and to the left in response to police violence, and how we can sort of take the initiative, what lessons we can take out of this to take the initiative. So I'm going to be talking about really briefly what happened in Greece. On December 6th, the police murdered Alexis Gregoropoulos, 15-year-old kid, in a neighborhood of Athens called Exarchia. And it's a neighborhood that's very close to the Athens Polytechnic Institute, which is a university that has historically, the students of that university have played a strong role, a really powerful role in responding to police violence, and in the past to the dictatorship. In 1973, there was a really well-known and well-publicized famous uprising that happened out of that university that struck a really powerful blow against the fascist dictatorship that was controlling the government at that point, and actually was sort of it's taken as one of the sort of key moments in the resistance that led to its overthrow. And part of what happened was the sort of police tried to invade that university, and in doing so, they made the university, sort of one of the responses to that was to make the university off limits to police action, to state action, which is very much what we saw in Oaxaca. Because that's an institutional, it's been institutionalized in Mexico as well. So we saw that in Oaxaca, we saw that in 1968, the student movement in Mexico City in the UNAM. And so the institutionalized spaces of the universities, for example, give people strategic places in the cities to organize. Which brings me to the second point, which is where and how people are organizing. One of the things that I saw on the internet, there was a interview that I was looking at with one of the collectives in Greece that was involved in this organizing. They're called the Void Collective, and one of the things that they were saying was that The one of the strategies that they're using is they're using affinity groups, what they're calling affinity groups to organize, which are organizations and collectives that organize together not only in terms of and around very specific political issues, but also they have a long history of organizing as sort of collectives and communities and sort of just in terms of being friends, and they care for each other. And so I just wanted to read a quote from this interview with the Void Collective. They say, "There are hundreds of small, totally closed affinity groups, groups based in long-standing friendship and 100% trust. And some bigger groups, like the people from the three big squats in Athens and three more squats in Thessaloniki. There are more than 50 social centers in Greece and anarchist political spaces in all the universities of the country. Also, the anti-authoritarian movement has sections in all major cities, and there's a network of affinity groups like the Black Bloc active in all Greek cities based on personal relations and communicating via telephone and mail. For all of them, indie media is very important as a strategic point for collecting and sharing useful information, where conflicts are happening, where the police are going, and so on." So one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting about that was this long-standing history of organizing in sort of dispersed throughout the country. And you can see that reflected in the sort of dispersed nature of the actions that went on in response to this murder, where there were events that involved sort of 50 to 70 people blocking public buildings to much larger scale events like big concerts in Athens where 10,000 people came out to see politically conscious bands play and show their support. So you can see that the sort of affinity groups can mobilize lots of people, and they have the potential to mobilize lots of people, but they also have the potential to mobilize smaller groups of people in larger spaces around the country. We're going to go to a musical break right now, and we'll be back to talk about Oscar Grant in the light of what we just heard about.
And now we're going to briefly go into an incident that happened at the New Year, January 1st, with a young adult, Oscar Grant. And just to summarize the incident in itself, it was about 2 o'clock on the New Year and on the BART train, and there was a report of some scuffles or a fight that broke out. So by the time the BART got to Fruitvale, there was a pretty serious number of cops, I think anywhere from 4 to 6 BART police, and then thereafter there would be Oakland police that showed up. And what happened is they lined, I think it was 4 to 5 individuals up on the wall that they suspected. They didn't necessarily have proof that they suspected that these individuals were part of the fight on the BART train. And soon after that, there was Oscar Grant was asked to, or forced on the ground, handcuffed on the back. Soon after that, Johannes Messerli violently put his knee and his hand and was pressing down on Oscar Grant, and then reached behind and grabbed his gun and what people are saying executed Oscar Grant to leave him there to die actually on the Fruitvale plank of the BART. So with that, there was a very wide community response, and I'm going to pass it over to Victoria to summarize that.
The most interesting part about this case is not exactly what transpired on that January 1st morning. You know, it's obvious the tapes are everywhere, the footage is everywhere. Oscar Grant was shot point blank without provocation, without cause. And this isn't by any means anything new. This wasn't news to people who have lived in poor communities of color. You know, this type of things happens all the time. But the difference with this incident, much like Rodney King, is it was caught on tape and widely disseminated. In terms of the community response, it's been really interesting to look at what the response has been in Oakland and comparing it to what the response has been in Greece. A lot of news was coming in from Greece that showed very vivid pictures of people taking over the streets, defacing private property and things like this, and just really holding it down on the streets for an extended period of time. When we kind of compare that to the response in Oakland, we have to ask ourselves, well, why was there such disparity? Yes, there was an action on January 7th, Wednesday afternoon, that it was a peaceful rally, organized as a peaceful rally at the Fruitvale BART station, and then there was a march to downtown Oakland. There was a confrontation with police, private property was damaged, and that made it on the news, right? But it was only for a night that happened, a night or so. When looking at all this, we really have to ask ourselves why, what is the difference here, you know? Are people in the U.S. or Oakland just not as outraged over the murder of another young person? I don't really think that's the case, so much as kind of the infrastructure that was set in place beforehand. As, you know, Dan mentioned earlier when he was talking about Greece, there were many, many affinities already working together prior to the shooting of this young man in Greece. So kind of when that moment came, you know, when all these groups of people who had been meeting and talking for many, many years prior to this and, you know, building a movement based on communication and trust and friendship and the things that Dan was talking about, they kind of were already ready to mobilize. They're already ready to take over the streets.
So in referring back to what Dan was saying about Greece and also looking at the similarities in the context of police brutality here in Oakland, I think what the response to the Oscar Grant murder kind of shows us that Oakland in itself needs to get organized to respond effectively to the incident, in the sense of holding the police accountable, but also building new community connections and new relations that will help care for and sustain communities of color and communities in crisis, as this community is right now. And specifically because Oakland has a history of being organized and a history of being abused and distraught by the Oakland police, such as we all know the Black Panthers' history and many of the homicides that happen in Oakland. So I think, again, this incident asks Oakland and many of the organizers that have been a big part of organizing the response after this incident have said they, as a community, need to get organized and need to come up with ways to be prepared for incidents like this to happen and not just react to the incident after it happens, but actually be ready for it to happen so they can heal and sustain and renew their own communities. So now members of the Radio Collective have been present in many of the events that have taken place after the incident in response to the shooting. So Sada's going to talk about a benefit that she went to here in San Francisco and to look at how San Francisco has been responding to the incident. Victoria will also speak about a town hall meeting that she went to.
So I was able to attend a benefit here in San Francisco for the folks who had gotten arrested during the rebellion for Oscar Grant. And one of the observations that I made while I was there was the crowd that was there, which was basically made up of white anarchists. And I think that it kind of demonstrates the fragmentation of groups that are organizing around Oscar Grant and the fragmentation of the left. Also, one of the interesting things that points that they brought up was justice and what we who are organizing around Oscar Grant, like what do we mean when we say we demand justice? And I thought that was a really interesting or a point to bring up and something that they were pushing for us to discuss as a community.
And just to build off what Sari was saying, that fragmentation is something we've also been seeing in the media. So it's going to work against us in multiple ways, and the mainstream media like thrives off making us look even more fragmented. So when the rebellion happened, you know, what was on the cover was black-owned business gets hit by anarchists, or poor person's car gets messed up by anarchists. So as this movement is emerging, and all of us that are a part of it, we should be aware of that, how the fragmentation is being portrayed in the mainstream media, and how we need to work quickly to be less fragmented.
Yeah, I attended a town hall meeting that was held at a local church in Oakland, West Oakland. It was the second town hall meeting that was called by the faith-based community in Oakland, the Black faith-based community. And it was a great turnout. There were over 150 people there representing all sorts of groups, all sorts of religions, all sorts of political affiliations, varying in age and gender and race. But one of the interesting things that I found from just listening in on the meeting and kind of getting a sense of where people are at is that I think as a community, people themselves don't know a sense of where they're at or where to move towards. You know, I mean, we all have, like, there's a sense of the damage that's been done and the suffering and the pain and all that, but not really where to go next. You know, Sara brought up that, you know, at this fundraiser in San Francisco, people brought up, you know, the question of what does justice look like? Coming from these different sectors, you know, be asking ourselves, like, well, what does justice look like? Does it look like all the policemen that were involved in that situation being arrested and then justice is served? Does it mean recalling the DA, the district attorney, which is actually on the table right now? Is that what justice looks like? Does it mean, you know, creating kind of mechanisms to help our community heal? Is that what justice looks like? These are kind of like some conversations that I think are beginning to happen. There doesn't even need to be a next time. Just we know what's going on. There's a war going on against communities of color, poor communities, queer communities. Crux of what is keeping us from really organizing to our full potential is the lack of encounter, which has been so central to Zapatista organizing and for themselves to gaining that international support and solidarity support is encountering each other, talking to each other, listening to each other, seeing what everyone has to bring to the table, and really coming up with a plan that where everyone's desires can be heard. You know, again, based off that town hall meeting, it was apparent that there's a lot of distrust from different groups. You know, a lot of distrust based on stereotypes, like Jessica was saying, you know, anarchists being framed as just white kids who came from nowhere, who just came to throw rocks at windows, or, you know, when actually there's a large group of anarchist people of color in the community who are very concerned about addressing these issues of state violence. You know, things like this, or anarchists being derisive of the faith-based community, no one's giving the youth credit for the way that they're organizing themselves. So I think it really just comes down to us as a starting point, coming together, hearing what everyone else is working on, and like making those efforts more cohesive. So on that, I think we're going to take a little musical break, and we will be right back to sum up. Have a basement party, a barbecue, how we used to do on the avenue. Have a family reunion. Man, how I miss those days when the kids were playing. No nines were spring, and the ice cream man came around the way. Lord, Miss Patty, won't you help me sing? Lord knows how I miss those days.
Dressing up for church on Easter Sunday.
How I miss those days.
Doing the electric sign in every party. So much more. We're working, we earn it.
basement party, a barbecue, how we used to do on the avenue.
You're back listening to Radio Zapatista, and just to kind of summarize what we've been talking about with Oscar Grant, Victoria was just mentioning the encounter, the importance of encounter to work through the fragmentation that is inherently in the national left, the global left, and the local movements here in Oakland and the Bay Area. And with that, the Zapatistas have always taught us that encounter provides a space for learning from each other and hearing each other's stories and to unfold the struggle that is happening for us here in the local Bay Area. So I think it's just important for us to remember that although it may be a rocky start and there's a lot of fragmentation, that I think if we're open to encountering each other and hearing each other's stories without trying to educate or judge or not listen to each other, but first really hear each other's struggles and hear each other's stories, that we will learn from each other, and then we will find new ways of confronting state violence, community violence, and other issues that we may be facing. So we will be continuing to follow this issue and this mobilization. But for more information for our listeners, there's three websites we would like to give you. One is DaveyD, that's DaveyD.com. IndieBay.org, and then IamOscarGrant, all one word, .com. And with that, I'm going to pass it back over to Dan.
It's interesting that to bring it back to the Encuentro thing, I think that to and bring it back to the context of what we were talking about in Greece, it's really important to note that as Magali mentioned in the interview that we did in the last Spanish show on January 2nd, there was actually a contingent of people from Greece at the Festival of Dignified Rage, or Digna Rabia, in Mexico City that was going on. They were able to make an announcement about this murder and sort of the kinds of actions that were going on, you know, in the festival, to be able to, as Tyler was talking about, facilitate the sort of this learning from these actions that can be going on, and also in the context of international solidarity, international, local, and whatever, intergalactic solidarity that the Zapatistas talk about all the time. I think that's a really powerful way to frame the benefits of solidarity in the context of ongoing organization and organizing with sort of faith-based, community-based, and affinity groups, and you know, whatever kinds of groups happen to be around, but just the importance of maintaining those connections, using them to teach and learn and all the time. And so for more information on Greece, I was looking at a blog called the Center for Strategic Anarchy. It's anarchiststrategy.blogspot.com, and also the interview that I mentioned with the Void Network, which is a collective of people in Greece who were participating in the movements, is available at CrimeThink. That's crimethinc.com. And also, for more information, there's always the Radio Zapatista .org website. That's our website, and all our shows are available there. So now we're going to hear some announcements and other news items that are important before we go away.
So for a couple of months now, we've brought to you the news from Lomas de Poleo, a city outside of Ciudad Juarez, right in the border town with El Paso, Texas. And today we bring you outline of the incidents that have happened that Amnesty International actually reported on the 16th of January of this year, restating all the events that have happened to them. So just to read you these, and you can also find them in their website, are the following. Residents report that on October 10th, 2008, two local men, Alfredo Piñon Valenzuela and Martin Gaviño, were kidnapped by members of the Mexican army in suspicion of carrying weapons and drugs. They were beaten and threatened that the same will happen to all residents of Lomas de Poleo if you don't leave. Alfredo Piñon, his house was torn down by security guards on the 23rd of October while he was testifying on the local prosecutor's office in relation to his kidnapping. On the 4th of December, armed guards tore down the home of one woman who had previously been told to leave her home or be killed. On the 27th of December, 30 guards attempted to destroy the home of an elder resident, but were prevented from doing so. On the night of the 31st of December, three men went back to his house, beat him, tied him up, and stole some of his belongings. On January 7th, the home of another woman was torn down and she was beaten. The guards threatened other residents with destroying the home if they intervened. Now, on the 21st of January, a group of residents will be attending the hearing of the Agrarian Tribunal, which should rule in the ownership of the land. So we are asking, we've asked to people to continue listening and send your appeals to the governor of Chihuahua in response to this request from the Compañeros of Loma de Poleo. It was part of the Sexta Comisión to ask those adherentes of the Sexta to please unite with these people who have been under attack for the past 6 years. So this is just a new invitation to continue to support these compañeros of Lomas de Poleo. For more information, please visit Amnesty International's website or even go directly to our website so you can see how you can send those appeals to the governor of Chihuahua. And for more information, you can also download our previous shows on Lomas de Poleo, which are available at radiozapatista.org.
And so just in closing, we wanted to mention an event that's going on here in the Bay Area for all of you that are local. If you recall, back in late October for Dia de los Muertos, there was an action organized by mainly by local high school students, in which they blockaded the immigration, the INS office in downtown San Francisco. And it was a huge, very successful action. You could check out coverage on that action on our website as well from past shows. But so there's a follow-up from this action being organized currently, and they're calling it an encuentro to stop the raids. So we will keep you posted on that as the date approaches. It is to take place in late February, so listen to our next show to find out the whens and wheres and the whos exactly. And it is just one more step, as we've been mentioning, to really building a movement of movements. So with that, we'd like to say thank you on behalf of Radio Zapatista, and tune in next time to see how you can get involved locally.
I'm not a hunter, but I'm told that in places like in the Arctic, where indigenous people sometimes might hunt a wolf, they'll take a double-edged blade and they'll put blood on the blade and they'll melt the ice and stick the handle in the ice so that only the blade is protruding, and that a wolf will smell the blood and wants to eat. And it'll come and lick the blade, trying to eat. And what happens is when the wolf licks the blade, of course, he cuts his tongue and he bleeds. And he thinks he's really having a good thing. He drinks and he licks and he licks. And of course, he's drinking his own blood and he kills himself. That's what the imperialists did to us with crack cocaine. You got these young brothers out there thinking that they're getting something that they're going to make a living with. They're getting something they can buy a car like the white people have cars. Why can't I have a car? They get something so they can get a piece of gold. The white people have gold. Why can't I have gold? They get something to get a house. The white people have a house. Why can't I have a house? And they actually think that it's something that's bringing resources to them, but they're killing themselves just like the wolf who's licking the blade, and they're slowly dying without knowing. That's what's happening to the community. You with me on that? That's exactly and precisely what happens to the community. And instead of blaming the hunter who put the damn handle and the blade in the ice for the wolf, that what happens is the wolf gets blamed for trying to live. That's what happens in our community. You don't blame the person, the victim, you blame the oppressor. Imperialism, white power is the enemy. Was the enemy when it first came to Africa, snatched up the first African, brought us here against our will, is the enemy today.